I know exactly what song I'm going to use for the intro. I guess I can just start pretending like I heard that music come in and be like, that's Beautiful Disaster by 311. And welcome to the Glenn Keck Show featuring me, Glenn Keck, MAGA Dave, sometimes my son. With special guest, maybe the dog. But yeah, I intend to choose Beautiful Disaster because it's got a good line that was appropriate for me all day, where it says, talks about burning bridges away. And I did some of that today. Not even intentionally. I wasn't trying to lose friends. I call these people friends, whatever. But I mean, anybody who will just stop talking to you forever because you disagree with them once politically is probably like they don't fall into the friends, but this person actually was a professional contact, had to do with some of the things that I do musically, and it's not a huge loss, but it's kind of disappointing because somebody I've known for a long time and worked with a lot, and it was a really minor thing. It was just me sort of disagreeing with this whole narrative that Trump and it's, you know what, I'll be the first to put my hand up and say that I just shouldn't be on Facebook. Facebook is just worthless. The only value it has is sort of letting periphery family members sort of know what your kids look like and stuff like that. But aside from connecting families, I think, and I don't even know how well of a job it does with that, our world was so much better when our political views were sort of ambiguous. When I was a kid, my parents wouldn't tell people who they voted for. That was like a rule. My parents wouldn't tell me who they voted for. I remember one time, I couldn't have been more than like 6 or 7. And my parents went to vote and I was with them and I asked them who they voted for. I had no idea who was even, you know, running at the time. And they said, well, we're not going to tell you. It's none of your business. It's none of your business who I vote for. And that's how a lot of people used to view politics. It was none of your business. But now it's what defines most people. And so people are so vested in it. But it's always that there's a lot of, I think that there are some stereotypes that are true for some people, right? There are stereotypical, you know, there are perfect versions of stereotypes out there. That's why stereotypes exist. When you start judging every person of a specific group or ethnicity or whatever, then that's wrong. But stereotypes are there because there are people that fit, you know, sort of into these molds of what stereotypes are. But this is not a stereotype. This is a fact. Any person that you ever meet that spends a lot of their time telling you how tolerant they are, how open-minded they are, those people are the most intolerant people that you'll ever meet. There's no exception. There is no exception. And what I sort of found out today with this guy, it's not just that he thinks that his opinion is better than mine. It's that he has aligned himself with what is the correct way of thinking. And anybody who even slightly deep, this is what I don't like about the Democrat Party. You can't deviate from this, these like mainstream thoughts, or you just get killed. There's not, you know, who's the Rand Paul of the Democrats? Who's the Jeff Flakes or the Susan Collins? They don't exist out there. They don't get elected. There's no diversity in the Democrat Party because skin color is not diversity. You could have people that are all different colors that are the same person. The opinions and, you know, people's life experiences. This is diversity. You could have people that are all the same color, and they could be the most diverse group of people, because you could have a group of white people, and one was from New York, and one was from Florida, and one was from, you know, Louisiana, and one was from California, and whatever, and they would be very vastly different people. Or you could have, like, 50 people from New York that are all different colors that think exactly alike. So it's diversity is sort of this intolerance, and these are buzzwords, and they're you should be very careful when you deal with somebody like this, because they pat themselves on the back. They call themselves tolerant because they feel like, number one, they're not racist. Number two, they're not homophobic. Number three, they're not sexist. And then, you know, that racism extends to, we've got this sort of new term that gets thrown around a lot since Trump selection. This is a xenophobia thing. Trump holds the same immigration policies as Clinton, Obama, Bush, yada, yada, yada. This stuff didn't become wrong until Trump was who he is and had these opinions. But, you know, it's, I don't know, it's a fraught. I found out today, because all I did was, everybody is on this bullshit that, like, Trump just didn't want to stand in the rain, that he got to France. He was doing this armistice thing that's obviously celebrating like the end of World War One. I think it's the end of World War One, and so goes to celebrate this thing. It's the weather is bad enough that the presidential helicopter is grounded, and it's like 50-60 miles away. It's they would have to cause major disruptions. So at this point, Trump is, in the minds of his detractors and a lot of the morons that are out there, he's just screwed no matter which way. Because right now, it's just that he didn't feel like going out in the rain, that he doesn't give a shit. When the White House came out and said, look, he didn't want to cause a bunch of traffic problems going down. Obama never went to one of these things, by the way. The closest that Obama ever came to going and recognizing this armistice from World War II was he sent John Kerry in 2015. Otherwise, Obama never showed up. He never never cared to participate. But Trump is disrespectful. And here's where the ridiculousness comes in beyond that. That in itself is ridiculous. And this is going to tie into what we're going to talk about today. But so there's this picture of Trump winking at Putin. Some photographer that was, you know, sitting there trying to snap as many pictures as he can in a minute got Trump blinking And so here's what the story is, that Trump said, fuck all these people that died in World War One. I don't give a shit. I don't like to be out in the rain. And then whenever he met later with Putin, he goes, hey, and winks at Putin. And Putin goes, yeah, fuck him. That's what people think happened. People think that Trump was disrespectful to this World War One celebration of the end of World War One, and that him and Putin were yakking it up about how much Trump is, you know, somebody who has made military spending and building up our armed services, and somebody who has done tremendous things for the military. Just ask people in the military. This guy is, you know, it's just amazing. And all I said to this fella was, look, are you fucking kidding me? You know, how many times do conservatives get killed for anything that even smell like a conspiracy? And this dickhead, even in his post, he put, well, I don't want to spread conspiracy theories, but this is seriously ridiculous. And it's like, you know, no, you don't get to do it. And I said, look, do you not have anything? Aren't there enough substantive issues you have with Trump that you don't have to get into this like petty, ridiculous bullshit? Aren't there plenty of things policy wise that if you want to make a big deal about, you can make a big deal about? And I said, you know, were you angry when Obama didn't go to any of these in 8 years? And, you know, it was, he goes, no, nothing that these two presidents did can even be compared. They are not, there is nothing that, yeah, I mean, you know, that this is in their minds. Trump is an affront to humanity, and he's not even in the same, him and Obama cannot be compared at all. And if I was a liberal, I wouldn't want to compare Obama and Trump either, because Obama looks real bad up next to Trump. So if I was a liberal, I would be fighting tooth and nail to not have the two compared either, because Obama was a spineless twat who did a lot for our enemies. And the fact that this whole farce with the Russian, you know, sack of horse shit, that this is what they want to put on Trump, I think is beyond comical. But you know, he overreacts us, and he says that Trump is dividing, he is polarizing the nation, he is dividing the nation. And I said, well, wait a second, don't you feel like posting this kind of stuff is pretty polarizing? Don't you feel like making a big deal out of something that's not is more polarizing? Don't you think that, you know, and he had already by this point lost it on me. And I said, you can't even have a conversation with somebody that slightly disagrees with you. Do you feel like you're maybe a little polarizing? And he sent me a personal message basically telling me that until I could open my eyes, not to fuck with him. And then he blocked me before I could even reply to him. And I have the guy's phone number, and I could have taken it farther, but at the end of the day, I had to sit down and go, well, I don't really give a shit. You know, somebody who can't, and there is a lot of these people out there. They spend most of their day posting anything they can find to Facebook, talking about what a piece of shit Trump is, what a this and what a that. He is so negative. He is so breaking apart our country. Meanwhile, you're not preaching to anybody on the other side. Everything that you're posting is just, you're just trying to enrage you and anybody who thinks like you. And then if anybody dares challenge it, they're, you know, you are defending the devil. So I'm sorry to go on that monologue here to begin with, MAGA Dave, but, you know, it's it's one thing to have these kind of interactions like on Twitter or Reddit with a stranger, and you can just, a lot of times you can go, well, that person is just fucking crazy. But it's quite another to have a conversation with somebody that you felt like was a normal, pretty well-adjusted person. But also, this is a person that's over 35 and doesn't have any kids. And I think that that is a now, there's plenty of people that are over 35 and they choose not to have kids, or they can't have children, and they have perfectly well-adjusted lives. They're perfectly full. But I've noticed that there are people who they get past a certain age and they have never had a family. They have never really had to think beyond themselves. And those are the people that really get wrapped up. And it becomes a whole, you know, it becomes their person. Like, I would love to take off, and I would love to go, you know, go around with like the Proud Boys and go to these rallies and these different things and show up and get in the face of these leftists that want to threaten and that want to intimidate and all this stuff. But I have a family. And so to a certain point, I have to let some of this stuff go, not just for the fact that I can't up and leave and go, you know, get in fights with people over politics. It's also that I can't let myself get too wrapped up in that, because it takes away from me being a father. But when you don't have anything, and like I said, there's plenty of people that don't have kids, but they have something else. You know, I'm not saying you have to have kids to be a well-adjusted person, but I do think that there is a certain part of our brain, of our personality, that is wired for this purpose. We're talking about on a biological, like primal level, like the need to procreate, the need to have a family and these type of things. For the people that don't, you know, I'm sure your life is full and fulfilled, but I think there are some people who should have had kids and should have had a family. And when they didn't, they sometimes these people tend to become very unstable later on in life. And they are coincidentally the most fiercely tribal people. They will not tolerate to be around anybody whose opinion differs from them, even slightly. I mean, if you're there's friends of mine that I have left my politics to a certain extent, my real identity as a musician. On my Facebook profile, I have gotten political some, but people don't. But there's a lot of people who have no idea what I think. And I've left it that way so that I can still work at times. I think that today was kind of a beginning of the end for some of that. But I would talk to people where they didn't think I was a Trump supporter. They didn't know what I was, but I was just slightly disagreeing with them, and just have them flip their shit that you don't exactly 100%, you know. It was just like an example, I guess, outside of my personal life and into actual politics. I can't remember what the position was. Attorney General, maybe it was a Senator House seat. I can't remember what it was. Maybe it was a state seat, but in Nebraska, there was a seat that had been held by Republicans for a long time, and there was a Democrat that actually had a shot at pulling it out. Now, I think this is maybe 2016, 2017, something like this. It's been a year or two ago. And the Democrat had a really good shot at unseating the Republican. But he was a pro-life Democrat. And that was part of the reason that he was going to sort of have a shot at this seat. And like I said, I can't remember the exact one, but Tom Perez, the head of the DNC, refused to go campaign for him, as did some other prominent. I think Bernie actually did. But the rest of the DNC completely wrote him off. And Tom Perez came out and said, if you don't agree with everything, we don't need you. Their lesson from the 2016 election was, we need to alienate more people. And you know, the problem with, I think, running your party that way is people change. People's opinions change. Their lives happen. They have a difference of opinion. You don't always think the same way. And I think it's really ridiculous for either party to be inflexible. You know, have your core values, but don't be inflexible. Now, MAGA Dave, we'll get into what the real topic. Do you have anything you want to add to my story here of burning bridges? You have any similar kind of thing, or you have anything you want to add on the back end of this?
Oh man, you know, so that's just kind of where we are in the country right now. You have a a younger generation, our generation and younger, that it's very divided, and there are some people that just can't take someone thinking differently than them. A lot of it has to do, I think, with what they believe in at home as a family, you know, how they grew up, and then also, you know, what's been pushed onto them through education and the media.
Right. Well, and I'll tell you, it's funny because if you talk to certain, like, atheists, you talk to certain people and you ask them, well, why don't, you know, what is your problem with Christianity? Or people that don't like Christians. And I've talked to people before and say, well, what's your problem with Christianity? Well, you know, they're so judgmental and they think that anybody who doesn't believe what they believe is going to hell, and they just, you know, they think they're better than everybody, and they think that their way is the best way, and that, you know, there can't possibly be another right way. And it's been a while since I've had a conversation like that with somebody, but I can pretty much guarantee that that's sort of a criticism that is a general criticism of Christianity. And I think in some ways it's a valid criticism. I think as Christians, I think Jesus was always working to reach out to people, to connect with people that were outside. You know, he a lot of times he came and he ate with the thieves and the prostitutes, and he dealt with the people that were outside on the fringes, because those were the people that needed him. So I think that Christians can do a better job of not excluding. But what's kind of, I guess, hypocrisy or ironic or whatever, is that a lot of those people that would say that about Christians, that's how they feel politically. Politics is a religion to them, and they feel like they have the answer, you know, to righteousness. They are the righteous ones. They have, you know, they have sort of figured this the way that things must go in the world. And if you think like them, you're going to be a part of heaven. And if you don't think like them, then you deserve to go to hell. And so it's interesting. The hypocrisy is so thick, and it's part of being human to get close to the line of irony and hypocrisy and things like that. So everybody is hypocritical at times and this and that. But I think what happens a lot of times is you have people that invest their whole personality in what their political beliefs and their sort of social concepts and constructs are. And to challenge them politically is not just to challenge their opinion, it's to challenge their identity. And so then it must be very fiercely protected, because you're not attacking and you're not challenging, you know, that person's thoughts. You're challenging their whole thought process. You're challenging their being of who they are. And so it just gets out of hand. But what I wanted to talk about today and something and kind of switching gears here, I just thought that was something to start off with, because I know a lot of people go through that. There's a lot of self-censorship nowadays. There's a lot of people that just, as opposed to get attacked and get beat up, lose friends, piss people off, piss family members off, as opposed to do that, they're just silent. And for the most part, I just don't talk to people on Facebook. I don't look on Facebook. I'll post like pictures of my family for my family that's on there. But I don't interact much. And it's because of days like today, I just barely get on there and mingle a little bit and I lose friends. But what I want to talk about is I want to talk about the media. And it's an interesting conversation. And I hope we have enough time to sort of dig into it. And I think we will, but, it's a conversation that is fraught on so many different levels, because first off, I think you have to identify who the media is. And there are so many different, media outlets, I guess. And there's fake news out there and there's real news, and, you know, to some people, fake news is mainstream. To some people, to other people, fake news is like smaller websites. But you know, there are so many different media outlets that it's hard to nail anything to just the media in general. I think you have to be specific. But for the purposes of this conversation, we're specifically going to be talking about what would be considered the mainstream media. And it's important to make the distinction that we're talking about media companies that have been around before the internet, and before real innovations in the internet, the age of the internet. It's important to make that distinction, because there's a point that I want to try to make that has to do with why the media are so all in now on bias and propaganda, whereas they used to at least, you could probably tell how they would lean, but they weren't so overt about it, and they weren't just throwing their weight in with one party and so openly trying to sway public opinion. Now it's pure propaganda. I don't care who you listen to, it's pure propaganda. Out there, the way they frame things, I heard, and this was listening to a conservative radio station. They had like, I think they have like CBS that comes in, and the way they were framing the protest in Broward County in Florida with all that's going on there is that Andrew Gillum was heading down. He's trying to be the first African American governor of Florida, and he's fighting voter suppression. That's all that they mentioned for it. That's how they framed it. So if you're somebody who's very sort of casual, what you're hearing is that in Florida they're trying to stop the first black governor by suppressing votes, and that's what they want you to think. That's so far from the truth. The only votes they're trying to suppress are like the votes from illegal aliens and, you know, what illegal votes and different things like that. These lawyers for Gillum and Nelson are actually trying to fight to have illegal aliens vote. The kid that shot up the school there in Broward registered to vote. That was something that that happened there in Broward County. I mean, it's a mess, but this is what the media does. So let's take this step by step, Dave. Who do you consider sort of the old media, the people that have been around, the main sources of media? Who would you put in those category?
Well, I found this graphic on the interweb here that I'm going to kind of read. There's some stuff on here. There's basically, this is a graphic from 2011, but there are basically six companies that kind of own all the media pretty much. And it's CBS, Time Warner, Viacom, Disney, News Corp, and General Electric. Some of that's changed since then, but so you've got basically six big companies that own, you know, most of your news outlets like CNN, ABC, Fox, NBC, you know, the
MSNBC,
list goes,
yeah.
Any of those offshoots, the New York Post, I mean, all of these print and television media as well. And, you know, I go back to the old, you know, cable TV, cable news was, you know, kind of evolving when I was in like junior high-ish kind of. But even before that, there was the big, you know, like CBS, NBC, ABC had theirs. And then, you know, you had CNN and Fox later. And so I think the big ones are those that I just mentioned. You know, as far as television goes, print is, you know, New York Times, Washington Post, you know, those old newspapers that have been around forever and a day, LA Times, you know.
Right. Well, and it's, you know, it's interesting because it used to be that the news was, you know, people would get a paper and then you watch the news in the morning, you watch the news in the evening. And that's how the news worked. It was people would sit down at night and watch the news, you know, and things changed when you started going to the 24-hour news cycle. These kind of things that were where you have CNN and Fox and MSNBC, you know, they're different in the fact that they are their sole purpose to be a 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, pumping out news. And so, well, that changes things, right? If you are trying to fit everything into an hour-long segment or on a newspaper, then things really need to be newsworthy that you're reporting. You're reporting on the most important things. And so opinion pieces would be involved, but, you know, you could only have so much. A lot more facts. When you start going to the 24-hour news cycle, well, now things change. Because, sure, you've got your big stories, and if you're looking on a national scale, there's things that are happening all over the country that you can report on. But you're going to do two things. You're going to, number one, you're going to start talking about things that maybe aren't as newsworthy because you need to fill time. And number two, you're going to start doing a lot more opinion because opinion and analysis fills up time, right? So it's if there's a car accident and I go out to report it, and I you know, write up a report on what happened, I can stand and say, well, today at 3:30, a car hit a truck. that was, you know, crossing traffic that ran a red light, and two people were injured. One person is hospitalized, and you know, that might be the end of it. But in the age whenever it became a 24-hour news cycle, then you might have somebody come in to talk about what a problem people running red lights are. How much of an issue is that? And what are government officials doing about it? And what has your government official done about it? And how many people a year die from people running red lights? And it becomes, for the natural sort of progression, something that's, I think, that's part of how the news changed in a big way. From being something we could all kind of rely on, to something that was more created to cater to a certain kind of audience. So you have in the 80s and then probably more the 90s, you have these companies like CNN and Fox and that are giving you the 24-hour news cycle. And then, and that you've got wars that are happening. And so that's a big part of, I think, what put the news into a 24-hour cycle. Different coverage of the wars that we were going through in the 90s with the first Gulf War and some of the conflicts. But so, you know, news changed and a bunch of things, crap gets tacked on to the actual facts. Then the internet comes, and the internet makes everything change. Changes everything in our world because information is now at our fingertips. Okay, why do I need a reporter to tell me statistics and facts when I can just look them up? You know, if I want to find out what happened in my local community, I can get online and I can look at police reports, and in a lot of ways have the same access to this, to have access to the same information that the news does. So at some point, the internet forced the news to start to change. And I think one of the side effects of that has become the biased news that is a little bit less like an actual factual news company and is more like geared towards entertainment to a certain demographic. You know, CNN is a company now that is made for a specific kind of person. They have a specific audience. They're not trying to talk to everybody in the country. They're not interested in, oh, I'm sure they're interested in it, but they're not geared towards trying to, you know, there's a certain way that you talk and you report when you're trying to appeal to everyone. And so that's part of how the internet has changed the media. But in a lot of ways, it did and has begun to do what, and I think the irony is that Trump kind of forestalled this a little bit, but the media naturally starts being phased out because now you have so many different outlets that crank out news, and you have hyper specialized. You have like the Huffington Post and the Daily Caller and Vox and these hyper partisan outlets that really cater to these are for the younger people who are really far to this side or that side. And the Washington Post, the New York Times, CNN, Fox, and MSNBC, there was something, there has always been where the news came from has always been important. But when the internet is like, you know, somebody, if I remember hearing that like Nikola Tesla had figured out a way to do this, but like if you could just draw energy out of the air, right, then we wouldn't need the power company. You know, if you could just draw your own power out of the ground or out of the air, then you wouldn't need to pay the power company. And so you don't need to pay the news company whenever you can get online and find the information that you want without having to subscribe or have a cable package or whatever. You just need internet access. Most people can do that on their phone. And so all of this that I'm setting up here is because I was sitting the other day, I was really thinking, I was trying to understand, why is the media so biased? Why is the propaganda? After I heard the thing about when they were talking about the Florida, the people protesting at Broward and how they referred made it about Gillum being black and that he was fighting suppression, which is again not true. And I thought, why have they decided to go all in? Are they really just that partisan? Does Trump really just drive them that crazy? And I think that's part of it. But I stumbled upon something that may be obvious to a lot more people, and I think that maybe it just hasn't been. At least I haven't heard anybody. I'm sure this is not something have originally come up with. And I would love to hear, you know, find a segment somebody else talking about it. But it's like the media has a vested interest. The New York Times has a vested interest in being able to sway an election. Okay, because if the New York Times is just another source of news, then it's just another piece of paper that's going to get phased out by the internet. You know, whether it's a physical copy or whether it's on the internet, right? Eventually the New York Times, because they were supposed to be the old standard. They were supposed to be the ones that gave you the news, and the way I hear people talk about it, I've always felt like they were biased, but that they were let, you know, they weren't trying to be biased. They were just trying to give you the facts. Well, it's one thing if the New York Times is just another way you could get your news, or CNN is just another way that you can get your news. But if they can get people elected, then they are infinitely valuable. If the New York Times can sway voters nationwide, then they're infinitely valuable, way more valuable than if they're just reporting the news. And so I think that they were very, I think they came out of Obama's presidency very confident. I think they felt like they had a lot to do with him becoming president. I think they felt like they had a lot to do with running interference for his presidency. I think they took a certain amount of pride in the legacy they felt they had built for him. And I think that he treated the media like all the ways that people say Trump does. He spied on them. He jailed reporters. He had reporters kicked off the press corps when he just didn't like how they interrupted him or asked a question when he said he didn't want to have a question asked. He was terrible to the media, but they were sycophants for him. They just absolutely adored him. But they gave off of this, you know, we're important. We got you here. Rush often says that the media, that the Democrat Party takes their cues from the media, that the media is actually running it. And I think that they would agree with you to a certain extent, because I think that's how they want to present themselves, valuable to politicians, valuable to wealthy, wealthy individuals who want to pull the levers of politics. You know, if you're Jeff Bezos and you own the Washington Post, you have to really feel like you have some power over the population. You've got a major amount. And that's not just the power that he has with being one of the wealthiest men in the world and the way that Amazon is run and all the things that, that go with that. But he has to feel like this incredible source of power that he gets from running and owning a news outlet, controlling the flow of information. And so if the Washington Post were just a newspaper, that's one thing. But if they are part of the control panel to, shepherding the population one way or another. So I think that when they lost this election with Hillary and any other that they've lost, because it's not just them, it's Hollywood too. These people, you know, how important is Robert De Niro if he can affect voter turnout? You know what I'm saying? That's power. And that's what I think the media has sold all of their morals for. Not just to stay relevant. I think that was part of it. And I think that, again, Trump saved the media because they were dying before 2016. And imagine if you'd have had a Hillary or a Jeb Bush, then there would, they would be doing everything they could to not report on anything substantive. But it wouldn't matter if they could take credit for that victory. It would be the evolution into something far more powerful than they were ever meant to be. Now, of course, the media has been used time and time again through history. Obviously Hitler and Stalin and these different regimes to control propaganda. But, you know, what do you think of this concept, Dave, of that the media has this vested interest and that's why they're so angry with Trump? Because he exposed them that they didn't have their hand on the pulse like they thought they did. They didn't have their hand on the lever quite like they thought they did as it came to public opinion and the way that they could manipulate sentiment and get people elected.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, that's definitely a big part of it, because I feel like these people are mostly elitists. They feel, you know, again, it comes down to power, and along with that comes money and, you know, other things. But the majority of these people live in a bubble. You know, they don't come out to the Midwest, anywhere between the coast, and interview people and talk to people and find out what they think or how they, you know, what they believe in or anything. It's all revolving around Washington, D.C. and, you know, some of this, like New York, LA, Chicago, things like that. But the rest of the country, they could give two craps about, in my opinion. They never report on it. And they always put forth their opinion or spin on it as if that's how the whole country thinks or believes, that's the way it's being viewed by the rest of the country. And it's kind of messed up. It's not surprising. I mean, I was reading a WikiLeaks email the other day that was sent out by Hillary Clinton's campaign. And it says in the email, this is an off the record dinner with national reporters, especially those based in New York. Here's the goals of the dinner. Give reporters their first thoughts from the Hillary team. Setting expectations for the announcement, framing the Hillary message, and framing the race. And then...
Excuse me. Sorry.
You all right there?
Sorry about that. Hillary, I can't mute the headphone.
Hillary chokes you up. But anyway, then they have this list of reporters that RSVP'd, and it's 5 ABC reporters, a couple Bloomberg, a couple CBS, 7 CNN reporters, 7 MSNBC reporters, 5 New York Times, a couple Politico, a Vice and a Vox, of course, and 1 Huffington Post reporter. But it just goes to show, you know, what they do. It's all kind of a big, for lack of a better term, circle jerk, in my opinion. And they, you know, they all want to be in this big elitist, you know, power trip type of atmosphere. And like you said, if the media can prove to people with money and power that they can influence elections or influence the public in general, you know, they might have the ultimate power, you know, over any of these other people if they are successful with it.
Well, and they're like, they're all related. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, you think of the Cuomos. I mean, you know, you think about it. It's so funny when you hear like, this person is married to that person's, you know, brother or cousin or whatever. This is their, you know, sister-in-law. And I mean, it's been so bastardized that people don't realize how intermingled a lot of that, those people in the media are. And it's not an accident. These people, sought influence. The Cuomo brothers, their dad's a politician. He sought to put his sons in positions of power and influence. And where'd he put them? He put them either in politics or in the media. Mm-hmm. And it shows. And again, there has been an element to this for a long time. I mean, there's people to have talked about who controls the media, controls the narrative, and controls history. And so it's not a new concept, but I do think it's different now for the media, because I feel like they've rebranded themselves in an effort not just to sort of stay relevant, but to transcend into something truly powerful, to be on the same, you know, level. Those guys like Don Lemon, he feels like, I guarantee you that he feels like he's as important as like a Cory Booker. And, you know, Cory Booker feels like he's as important as, you know, a Martin Luther King or something like that. I mean, there's and now Cory Booker is an important person in the aspect that he's a U.S. senator and he helps make law. Now he's a fucking idiot, but you know, the kind of power that he has, you know, people like CNN, people like Don Lemon, they feel probably like they have some ownership in that. Because they can, I mean, how many times do you think that these people contact each other and say, hey, look, this is what we want from you. And if we don't get it, we're just going to report all the bullshit that's out there on you and just destroy you. The press really can and does work that way. And, I think it's more sinister because I guess for me, let me ask you this first before I go on any more rants about it. If you were somebody like Bezos, if you were, you know, a billionaire, a bunch of times over, and you owned, let's say you owned the New York Times, just being honest, would you tell them that they needed to report the facts, or would you tell them that you wanted a conservative spin on it, or would you just tell them out and out, destroy my enemies? You know, to a certain extent, those people like, you know, Bezos, that are wealthy and own these media corporations are all sort of, you know, just one or two steps away from politics. And the Disney guy who always talks about running and the different things. So, so if you were one of those, if you were a wealthy person and you own the New York Times, what would you do with it? Would you have it be a straight news thing? Or would you say, well, look, I don't want you to twist, but I'm going to look for more conservative people and put a conservative lean on it? Or would you just try to find the best person for the job? Or would you just outright say, go after my enemies? Anybody who comes after me, I want you to, you know, shred them. And would you use it as a weapon against the people that came against you?
That's a good question. I mean, I can, just me being me, I would say, you know, just report the news objectively. I know that's almost impossible. You know, there's always going to be some spin, but it wouldn't be what it is today. I'll tell you that. I mean, there'd be a lot of turnover. I would have to clean house, you know. That's a tough question, because, I mean, I also think Bezos is the type of guy that he didn't create Amazon, you know, by being a nice guy or doing things fairly, I assume, you know. Sure. There was, so, you know, should I expect that from him? Yeah, probably, in a way. I mean, who's to say what I would do? I mean, I don't know. I hadn't built, like, the biggest company in the world, other than, who's that, Walmart. It's probably, him and Walmart are probably the biggest retailers for sure out there. So I would hope that I would just make it objective as possible with the truth and nothing. I think one of the biggest problems with the mainstream media is they leave out certain things. They don't add context to certain things, and they add, you know, they put spins on it, like what you were saying earlier about the Gillum guy down there being trying to be the first black, you know, governor or whatever it is. You know, he's, you know, there's this whole thing about voter suppression and all of these stories out there about what's going on. And it's all, you know, the majority of it has spin on it. You know, I mean, they're ignoring the fact that this woman that's in charge down there has been written up God knows how many times for screwing up, basically. And she's still down there, and they're not even taking that into account. And it's because they're on the Democrat side.
Right. I mean, first off, you have this woman that obviously after Beetlejuice was banished to the sand, when he was banished to, like, that sand portal, and, like,
the sandworms.
Well, the sandworm ate him,
mm-hmm.
and he had to go back. So he didn't die at the end of the first one, because he was in the waiting room. He only had his head shrunk. So obviously what happened was, because he tried to get Lydia to marry him so that he could be out into the real world permanently. That was the only way that he could be in the realm of living for good, was if Lydia, who was the played by a Winona Ryder in the movie Beetlejuice, Lydia, he tried to get her marry him. It didn't work because obviously the plot of the movie, Alec Baldwin, of course he's involved, but he stops, him and Gina Davis were able to stop Beetlejuice. But obviously what happened is that Beetlejuice found this Brenda Stipes or whatever, Snipes, found her as a child and was able to marry her because she looks like the bride of Beetlejuice. I've seen a lot of pictures of Beetlejuice and her beside each other. And so that leads me to believe that she was probably fooled and tricked into marrying Beetlejuice. And
she's ugly inside and out.
That was a long way around to make a joke about her crazy hair. But, you know, nostalgia.
Hey, Beetlejuice is one of the most underrated movies out there. It's a great movie.
It really is. It's a great movie. But no, this woman defying court orders. We weren't mentioning anything like that. They're finding votes. They're having like truckloads. They had that Laura Loomer. See, and this is why you have to sort of be careful when you talk about the media, because there's all these people popping up like Laura Loomer, who I give her credit, man. She is like fighting tooth and nail to be recognized as a member of the media. And so many of these reporters hate her guts, but she is making a way for herself, because I think she's the one who broke the thing. She's the one that found the Avis rental agent that basically there was a box of ballots left in a rental car that somebody had checked in. It was a Democrat. Somebody had checked out a rental car while they were in Broward County. And when they went to go fly back to wherever they were going, they forgot that in the trunk there was a box of ballots. So, you know, this... You want to talk about what voter suppression is. Andrew Gillum is not fighting voter suppression. He is trying to, number one, if he's supporting these officials, they're obviously trying to get rid of Republican votes. So they are suppressing Republican votes. But I would argue this. If you're arguing that an illegal should vote, you're trying to suppress American votes. If you're trying to win an American election by counting people from Mexico, you are suppressing votes. You're trying to cancel out legitimate votes with ones of people who are not from this country, or they're dead, or they voted twice, or whatever. So, you know... It's just getting to preposterous, ridiculous levels. And I think the average person just, you know, can't tell the difference anymore. And there's a lot more apathy than I guess I had sort of previously thought. I think I've mentioned on the podcast, it's one of the effects of all of this that's been going on that I thought was good is that people need to be involved. I mean, hell, a lot of these elections only get out like 20% of the population. Imagine what these elections would be like if you got like 80% of the population. And there's no reason that we shouldn't. People should be invested in the way that our republic runs. You know, it's a wonderful, complex, but also simplistic system of government, and people should get out there and vote. And I thought, well, at the very least, more people are getting involved politically. And I think that to an extent, there are more people who are getting involved politically than before. But I think that there is also a real amount of apathy out there that's growing, because when I talk to people who, I mean, even just my wife or my brothers who have some strong opinions about some things politically, but don't necessarily follow all the news all the time. There's so much of it that we're just, you have to be checking the, like, I'll check my news app, Twitter, and Reddit. I don't know how many times daily, because things are constantly developing, and it's exhausting. And so it's interesting that when I talk to certain people, people I know that politics is not that important to them, they don't care at all. they're not even, you know, they'll see some stuff on Facebook and they might get a little half of this or half of that. But then there's also a certain effect of like these people that are posting on Twitter and on Facebook that are very biased. I think there's more people that get news from Facebook than Twitter too, which is kind of scary because I think that Facebook, there's far more misleading information on Facebook. And I think that's part of the difference is that generally on Facebook, you're going to have more, like my Facebook is majority people that I know have met. I would say there's quite a few people whenever I was more active playing music that were on my Facebook that maybe I didn't know. But for the most part, your Facebook is more of a representation of people you might actually interact with outside of social media. Twitter is a lot more interacting with strangers. And so if somebody posts something on Twitter that's kind of BS, you can sort of look through the comments and it kind of weed news out. But Facebook is far more deceiving. But even so, the people have just gotten apathetic to it because they know that there's somebody along the way is biased. If it's not the person commenting, then maybe it's the original person who posted, or maybe it's the news, you know, outlet that it came from in the beginning, whatever. Somebody is biased. And I think a lot of people have already made up their minds about Trump. And that's why I think that you have a difficult time gauging what 2020 is going to be like based on the midterms here. And honestly, I think the midterms, you know, they've been depressing with the way the Democrats have tried to steal the votes, because this stuff never happens for Republicans. They never find Republican votes. It's always that Republicans are winning on election night, and then as the days pass, you know, well, we forgot to count all these provisional votes that are from this mostly, you know, I mean, it's they never find Republican votes. So that's been disappointing. But if you compare Trump's, and we talked about this a little bit on the last one, if you compare Trump's midterm to Obama's first one, there's no comparison. Obama lost like 63 or something like that seats. So the Trump presidency has been able to retain and actually add to their Senate lead. We'll see how some of this stuff works out, but it looks like it's still going to, and it's important. It's important for who he's going to nominate as Attorney General. It's important because Ruth Bader Ginsburg looks like she's struggling a little bit. We don't know what's going to happen there. He's going to have to probably nominate another Supreme Court judge. And we're going to need a strong Senate for, I think, some of this crap that the Democrats. I think the first part of this next year is going to be rough. But, you know, Trump lives for this type of stuff. And so I expect him to sort of roll his sleeves up and, you know, kind of one of those things where you say to the media, you know what, you've been fucking whining for the last year. Let me give you something to fucking whine about. And I think he's gonna line up and he's gonna crack these people right in their face. And you know, Jerry Nadler, like this guy, I mean, who you know, Jerry Fatboy Nadler thinks that he's like you know, he's like talking on a train real loud so that Molly Hemingway can overhear him. I mean, what a fucking tool bag. These people that they have put out, Nadler, Maxine Waters, Nancy Pelosi, the one guy from Georgia, Elijah Cummings. These are fucking dinosaurs that are so corrupt to their own core, you know, that it's just interesting. there's going to be a natural, I think. And earlier when I said you don't have that Rand Paul type of, I'm curious. I don't know that she has the mental capacity for it, but I'm curious if this Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is going to start trouble with the Democrats. I think that she's going to start some shit, and maybe she's going to gum up the works.
Oh yeah. I'm right there with you on that. I think she's not very smart at all, and she's going to get in there and, you know, she's going to be one of these. I feel like there's some Democrats that are sick of like Pelosi and Schumer and all these older, you know, Democrats that have been in there a while, and they're going to have a fight over, you know, because there have already been some Democrats come out and say they're not sure that Pelosi needs to be Speaker of the House or whatever. So that'll be an interesting thing to see if that implodes. And I think that the Ocasio-Cortez or whatever her name is, she's just like one of those things to watch, you know, knowing that at some point it's just going to be just her being stupid as hell. You know, she's already proven that several times. So,
well, and they have what they've done with her. They did the same thing with her that they did with Obama, mm-hmm. but Obama was able to, they called him the great orator because he could just read shit.
Right.
You know, and so they took him, and obviously he had even more experience than she. She didn't have any experience at all in any of this. And when it comes down to these parliamentary procedures and some of these different maneuvers, knowing what's going on matters. Obviously, she'll have a staff,
mm-hmm.
but we all know that she's not picking her staff based on who can help her the most.
Right.
She's picking her staff based on what they look like, what their skin color is.
Mm-hmm.
Has nothing to do. She's not saying who.
What kind of overpress
can help me the most? Who has the, you know, the most knowledge that they can impart? They say, well, your skin is darker than mine. Good. Okay. Can we find anybody who's even darker than you? Because that would be great. Diversity is our strength, you know. And it's just interesting because I know I'm not the first one to say this, but like, if diversity is just skin deep, which is, that's what these people's definition is. It's just what your skin color is. I'm trying to think of a scenario where having people with a different skin color is a strength. And I'm just not, maybe if there was some like weird relay race where depending on what part of the equator you're on, I mean, there's no diversity. Now, diversity of thought, I think, can be a strength. It could also be total chaos. So, you know, if you have to have some of this, some of that, there needs to be some diversity. There needs to be some uniformity. There needs to be some people that conform. There needs to be some people that don't. But it's just the everything that she's running on could be described as skin deep. And I think that when she gets into the House, but I think that she is somebody, they haven't done a really good job of keeping her. They put her in front of the cameras like what they did with Obama, but Obama was able to handle it. She's not handling it real well.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not doing a very good job of, you know, saying, hey, hold on a second. Let's, you know what, why don't you just, and she's got a taste for it too. So she's going to be somebody, I think, that, of course, I mean, you want to talk about stupidity. You got the one Democrat from Georgia that thought that if you put enough military equipment on Guam that you were going to flip the island over. Into the Ocean. You remember that?
Oh, yes. I remember it very well. I've watched that.
That happened.
I used that as a... I use that as probably the best example of we have, you know, politicians that are just abject idiots, you know?
Idiots. Just a stupid person who got elected because... Literally, for that guy, probably
because he's a black guy. Yeah, that guy, in that guy's case, yeah, because he's a black guy. So that's why he got
the vote. You know, that's the danger when you're sending people to, because there are too many people that take for granted and don't take seriously what these people are. You know, but we live in a representative republic. Right, so we all can't go yell it out in Washington D.C. So we elect people to go speak for us, and in any other instance, I think people would take this a lot more seriously. Like if you know, like a lot of people like to watch The Walking Dead, right? Whenever the Walking Dead, they have their group. And whenever they interact with other groups, what happens? Well, they send their representatives to go talk to their representatives. And whatever is hashed out there affects everybody. So they have to be very careful of who is leading them. And they have to be on the same page of what they're going to do, because it's an instant impact. If they're following somebody who is crazy and doesn't think things through, they could all die. And or if they follow somebody who's too cautious, they could miss opportunities and they could all die. So it becomes very perilous. And what we don't realize is that is what, you know, we're doing on a bigger level. We have a group of people here in Arkansas. We have four representatives in the House, we have two senators. We have six fucking people in this state that speak for everybody. And in some cases, you know, depending on what's going on, one person speaking for everybody. So, you know, of course you have governors and state, but in national politics and people, they will get zeroed in on this or that or whatever, but they don't really look into the person. They don't participate in the process to pick that person. You know, they don't get involved in the primaries or whatever, but you have to understand that person is you. They're representing your voice. And there are people in New York, like a lot of them, that Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is their voice. And their voice is real fucking stupid.
Yeah, I mean, there's a... I heard a clip on Rush the other day of just... You know, we were talking about this, the country, and, you know, how, you know, government works, the way it's set up by the Founding Fathers, and there's a lot of people that don't understand that, you know. There's some people that kind of understand the basics, which is good, and, you know, not everybody's going to get super into it to where, you know all the ins and outs of it, but the way it's set up really is a great way. You know, it was in defiance of the way basically the rest of the world governments have been set up, where government was a primary number one thing, where this, our Constitution and Declaration of Independence, the whole thing was set up for the government to be smaller and the individual was the more important thing. And, you know, there's a lot of people that don't understand how it works and why it was set up that way. And a great example of just objects, you know, ignorance was on The View, which is one of my favorite shows. And I'm being very sarcastic. But Joy Behar, or as Rush calls her, Maude Behar, you know, she's really, you know, a stupid person in general. But
she is as dumb as it fucking gets.
She really is. But she accused Republicans of gerrymandering, which it's actually, I found out, called gerrymandering. It's named after the guy that started it. And if you don't know what that is, look it up on the internet. But she accused, I forgot, Republicans of doing that in some state for the Senate, which, if you know a little bit about the Senate, each state only has two Senate representatives regardless. So you can't fudge any sort. I mean, you get two, no more, no less. So, you know, that's a great example of someone who's out there trying to project their influence and their thoughts about, you know, politics and government, and they don't have a clue of what's going on. They're making these accusations that in reality make zero sense and sound like someone who's totally stupid, which is right in this case.
Well, and it's like, you know, if you honestly sit and think, again, this is where you have to look at what are you going to label the media? Is The View the media? Well, probably, because they spend so much time now talking about politics and talking about current events. And they come from probably the most ignorant people in the mainstream that talk about politics, because they know very little. They're just old, angry women.
Mm-hmm.
You know, who and even I know there's some younger ones I think, but they're all just, you know, they're all angry and ignorant, and
it's a dangerous combination.
You know, ignorance is one of these things. It doesn't have to be. There's a lot of things I'm ignorant of, right? To be ignorant, it's not like, you know, saying somebody is like stupid. It's not saying, well, you're incapable of learning. They're ignorant of things. But see, I'm ignorant of things too. And how do you remedy ignorance? You learn. You expose yourself to whatever it is. If I'm ignorant on how something works, well, then I learn how it works and no longer am I ignorant. But when you're willfully ignorant, which is what these women are, it's a different thing. But calling somebody ignorant is not necessarily an insult. It's the willful ignorance. And these women are ignorant. They could learn what they're talking about, but they don't. So, but do you know, are they part of the media? Well, probably, but normally they shouldn't be, because I don't watch Ellen, but my wife will watch clips of hers and whatever. You don't, maybe rarely, if it is, you know, something here or there. Ellen is obviously a liberal, and she, it's not that she hides how she feels, but that's not what her show is about. Her show is centered around, like, cute little funny things. A lot of the bits and stuff on her show are just, you know, her show is just I'm just a cute little funny, you know, lady, and here's my show, and we're all just going to have fun and laugh together, and that's what it is for the most part. That's what something like The View is not meant to be. A daytime is not to me meant to be the same thing, but yeah, there are plenty of things that Joy, well, no, I mean, she's fucking stupid, but like, the rest of them, there's plenty of things that these women do have plenty of experience and knowledge about. They could talk about, and they could speak about with wisdom and with some actual knowledge. But they don't, because they want to have an effect politically. They have gotten caught up, just like Jimmy Kimmel or Stephen Colbert or these. These different night show, tonight, whatever, the late night comedians. Are they considered part of the media? Well, I think they are now to a certain extent because they want to take news, manipulate it, and influence people. This is a big machine. And like, I think it's a great point that you made earlier when you were talking about that there are these companies that like own and for Disney. Well, you know, how many different news outlets do they own? If you're Time Warner, how many different news outlets do you own? If you're Fox, how many different news outlets do you own? You've got, you know, Fox News, Fox Business, Fox Sports, you know, and all kinds of things in between, different shows and different publications. And I mean, so these, you know, whenever somebody like Disney goes all in, well, then they're going to hit you from every angle. They've got their ABC News cranking bullshit in your ear. And then whenever you want to watch a little ESPN, they've got all their woke, you know, full of shit, you know, anchors on there pumping you full of the same crap. And then you want to just watch a show on one of their things, and that's full of propaganda. And then so after that's done, you watch a late night talk show, and that's full of fucking propaganda. And so from the moment you start to the end of the day, these companies are seeking to give you their narrative. And I think that's one of the reasons that Trump makes them so angry, is because they have to sort of tussle with him for the narrative. He's able to manipulate entire corporations and make them all talk about him and make them all say certain things and do certain things. And they run in circles around each other. But I think it's so much more than what a lot of people have ascribed it to. I think it's more than just that they're partisan hacks and they hate Trump because he's a Republican and because he's pro-America and all this stuff. I think so much of that stuff wouldn't cause these people to be willing to let their standards slip so much. But I think it comes down to the fact that they want their goal is to have that control and to be able to show that they have control. You want to get elected? Okay, well, come to us. It's just like Maxine Waters. She does these mailers, right? So she will send out a mailer to Democrats in California telling them who she thinks they should vote for. Well, is there anything wrong with that? Well, turns out there is, because she charges these Democrats to get put on her list, right? Kamala Harris paid like, you know, $30,000 to get put on this thing. Gavin Newsom paid like $44,000 to get put on this thing. So she's not doing you a service. She's doing herself a service. She's lining her own pockets. And she's doing it by trying to affect. She puts out a guide. This is how you should vote. And the people that get that mailer from, okay, well, this is what I do. And it's valuable. It's so valuable that other candidates in California that are arguably in higher positions of power pay her because she helps them get elected. So you can imagine that if Maxine Waters with a fucking mailer can make hundreds of thousands of dollars over the, you know, that's just one of the many ways she's manipulated her position. She did a lot to bail out a bank that her husband had a bunch of shares in right before the housing or during the housing crash. They would have lost a ton of money. Her husband had a huge percentage of shares in a particular bank, and she lobbied and got that bank they bailed them out, and it made them millions of dollars. So she's been able to parlay her position, and that's why the corruption for senators and you know, representatives and people in positions of power in the government, that's why corruption is so widespread, is because the access to power. Well, I think the media has always been close to that, but purposefully, I think that they thought their power was to keep those people in check. We decide who we go after. We decide. We took Nixon down because we reported on what he was doing. We, you know, we'll go after who we want to go after. We won't go after who we don't go after. I think that's where their power was. They saw the way things worked. They saw the manipulation. They saw the corruption in politics. And they thought, well, it's a power that we have to choose who we want to target, who we want to go after, who we want to report report on. You know, if Bob Menendez, the guy who just got reelected in New Jersey, if the media reported honestly about the things that he's done, he should never be anywhere near a position of power again, because he's used it to hurt people, hurt little girls, and do some awful things. He's a pedophile. He's had sex with underage prostitutes. That's pedophilia, you know. But the media doesn't give a shit. So it's not about morality. It's about power. But I think that they've decided that power to target and eye corruption is not enough anymore. And so they have focused to areas of propaganda, because that's where their real power can lie. That's where they can be even more powerful than the Democrat Party, right? Because why is the DNC powerful? Well, that's how Democrats get elected. Why is the RNC powerful? Well, that's how Republicans get elected. If you want to get elected, you know, I forget the guy's name, but the guy that was running against Maxine Waters, he's run against her a couple times, and he doesn't get anywhere near it. And he's a Hispanic guy, and he got a little bit of attention on Twitter because people there's enough hatred of Maxine Waters that this guy got some Twitter attention. But when it actually came down to the vote, you know, he wasn't even close. She didn't even debate him because she didn't have to. She didn't even have to acknowledge him. And the RNC wouldn't give him a dime. Why? Because they didn't want to waste their money. You know, but having the RNC back you, it's you know, it's money, it's power, it's whatever. So the media, if they could be more powerful than both the Democrat and the Republican parties, if they can put people in the presidency, if they can put people in the highest levers of power, and they can run cover for anybody they want to run cover for, then that is true power. So I think what you're seeing is, now I'm not saying that, like, I did say earlier, like, Don Lemon wishes he was Cory Booker. And I think there is some of that, or wishes he, or thinks of himself as on the same kind of par. But I think it's less about the individual anchors and the individual personalities having any kind of real power, and it's more about the guys like Bezos. Who does Jeff Bezos ever talk about running for president? Why the fuck would he do that? You know, if he wants something done, well, he just does it. He just gets it done. I'm sure that he has plenty of important politicians on both sides of the aisle in his cell phone. You know, so But these are the people who I think the media, people like Jeff Zucker, that runs CNN, I think this is what they're seeking to do. Because if you look at CNN, you think, well, they're last in ratings. They're, you know, they get killed. They can't even beat like Nick Ignite. You know what? How is that worth anything? That is something that used to be valuable. It's no longer. But if they can get CNN to a point where people believe that they are part of a machine, they can get people elected, then they are all of a sudden infinitely valuable. And so I think recognizing what's going on is the first part of it. I don't know that there's anything that we can do about it. I don't know that people get in trouble anymore that are in politics. It doesn't seem like it. It seems like that we find out that people do stuff. This Brenda Snipes lady or whatever her name is in Broward County. Is anything going to happen to her? Probably not. Like, nothing ever happens to these people. They're corrupt. They get caught being corrupt. The media runs interference for them, and nothing ever happens for them. Nothing ever happens to them because there's no law enforcement in this country that will go after those things. Because law enforcement, like the FBI, has become biased. So I don't know that knowing this means anything. But I think it's important for people to be able to discern truth and reality from, from lies and manipulation, because your vote still counts. And maybe that's the only thing that we can do, is just not be influenced by it. Because the more, the fewer people who are influenced by these machines, and don't be fooled into thinking that, like, well, I don't listen to CNN ever. I only watch Fox. Well, that's still part of a machine. Ever since, like, Rupert Murdoch, like, ever since the original Fox guy had all this stuff happen and then he passed away, like, I don't trust what's going on behind the scenes at Fox, you know, anymore. I like some of the personalities on there, but then there's some of the people that are on Fox that I think are utterly questionable. So just don't be influenced by anybody. Well, and it's such a hard word, say don't be influenced. Well, you're going to be influenced, I guess, but don't just buy the narrative. Look at it, you know, look at all the things around it. Don't take things for granted. And if you're one of the few people that listens to this podcast, you're somebody who is digging and looking for truth anyway. And I think it's good. I think it's good to have multiple different outlets that you listen to. I listen to a ton of different things. Some I really agree with, some I disagree with. So, I think that, but I think the best that we can do is to just not allow ourselves to be to really be influenced one way or another, to get all of our information from one source, I guess. Not that you won't be influenced, but if you only get your news from CNN, or you only get your news from Fox, or you only get your news from Facebook, or you only get your news from Twitter, you know, that's where I think people run into problems. So, Dave, you have anything else you want to add to this conversation?
No, man. I mean, just, you know, critical thinking is a skill that is being lost, and something that I think all people need to practice every day.
It really is. Think for yourselves. Think things out. Think, how does it make sense? Trust no one.
That's old Stone Cold Steve Austin from the wrestling day. Don't trust anybody.
But just, you know, thinking for yourselves, it is and the fact that people are constantly self-censored, and the fact that people like my son that are supposed to be sleeping in the Bobo won't, you know, stay asleep. I think that's the indicator that we've gone a little long here on this episode. But I think it was important because I think there's a lot of people that deal with some of the things that we talked about. So for Glenn Keck and Glenn Keck Jr. and MAGA Dave, we're going to sign off here. And folks, shut up, buddy. All right. Well, y'all have a good night.